Mr. Gally, Reel 7. Have you any more memories of New Brunswick before we move on?
Well, I think we're just about to talk more of Brunswick.
How long were you there?
I think about 6 years. We couldn't tell me about that. At the end of the period, I had my first official leave, or what was to be my first official leave. Still without any equipment, I came home on leave. I haven't mentioned before, it's an old friend of mine. I mentioned during this year, but I also had a good friend called George Morris from French Harris. I don't know how I missed George Elvis for now, but maybe that was changed. Well, he was one of the last people to go. He was a butcher and a good cricketer. We came all the way together. And that was our first leave. And we sort of thought that we were qualified soldiers then, now only. We got our first 7 days. But we had 2 or 3 years of warm and human life in the game. Someone talking about the uniforms and all that, it was all dressed. We came out and we said we would go to the pictures. That was the old local cinema, which is known as the Pavilion, on a Friday night. We were sitting watching the picture when the screen changed. And on the screen, in handwriting, was a note to all members of the Humanity Corps. In this cinema. Please report back to your local ghetto within 24 hours. This is an official government instruction. Well, I wasn't aware that a holy war had been out in France. And I think that was the night that the Germans went into Belgium. I could be wrong.
So that'd be around about the 10th of May. That's when the Germans invaded Belgium and Holland.
That was before that. I can't remember the year tomorrow. But anyhow, we were in his cinema. So he looked at me and I looked at him and said, "Why, we members of this time, we better get out." So he said, "Well, I'll go down home." And his dad was a policeman. He said, "What I'll do, I'll see me dad and see if he can run us a down. Because they had a car at the time." So I came out, went home, and said my goodbyes to father and mother. And George's father run us to the blue hole. Or all the hall at the bottom of the bank. Well, we went in and we told Kate where we made all the time. All the kids who made the pictures were being there left in about a couple of hours. They were given a couple of blankets. He said, "Bed down there." Then we bedded down at the drill hall. And shot there, I think it was the Saturday morning. And on the Saturday morning, pick up your gear and get aboard this bus. So we got aboard of the bus and off we went to West Arlico to a place called Trunksville Hall. We still not knowing what was going on. Everybody was watching on the air, and it came out, officer with his chamber, and we're all in the main hall. Every man will come up to this table and sign his declaration. Not will you do it, or do you, will you think about doing it? You will sign his declaration. So we went up to the table, and it was to say that we would serve His Majesty's government, the British Expeditionary Force, or whatever it was, overseas. So you sign your name for this. Before you knew where you were, you couldn't read it. And then, falling outside, where Sergeant Wood, better known as Sergeant Lattery Wood, would take me to a gas chamber. But we haven't got any gas masks. Oh, that's all set. For him, we're all given a gas mask. So what was Dr. Wood like? It's fully on the phone equipment, not the center, wasn't it? So we all got a gas mask, and away we go through this gas chamber. Tear gas. This was supposed to be an experience to learn how to put the mask on, I suppose. We're all made for it. And that was my experience, that was a gas test.
And did you have to take the gas mask off in the chamber?
The gas mask off when you came out and crawl under this new canvas thing. And while you were wiping a few tears away from your eyes, another sergeant said, follow me. This was a continuous follow me. A pair of pouches. A new wedding belt. A mother sack. A big pack. And all the equipment that you never had, we got in about 10 minutes. And then we were discussing. What have you been signing up for? Why did you not read it? No, I didn't read it. Oh, we're going to France. Charming, yes, I think. Are we getting any leave? No, because our leave is being pushed forward. No. I think 48 hours. Well, how fortunate I was, my relationship right next to the Constable Court. And it worked in the court office. There was a wall about 9 foot high around. After the family came and we made a room, they were all that wall. So, when I watched you get caught, I said, well, I'm going to tell my parents what happened. So, with the help of George Morley, I was just sure that he could get away from me down and up, therefore, I got over the wall. Went to my uncle's, he called Manny Boyd, went there, surprised to see me. I said, look, can I get word? My own father and my uncle's here. And in the next 48 hours, I'll be off to France. I said, I'll do that. He said, I'll go to telegram to your children and tell you things you're doing in France. So, I gave him the address of Morris, George Morris. And for all of those being there, he said, hey, Mama, I'm with you. So, I came in back to the name here. No, thank you. I was going to climb over the wall and I looked at the main room and saw the house where I just walked in. And then we got ready. And the uncle came through the West Harbour door. And we marched through the streets of West Harbour cover. A motley crowd. And full pack. Small pack on the side, carrying everything. It's like a Christmas tree.
Crowds out to see you go.
But when I got to the corner, I called the water station. You were doing the same. So I just got time. You can't be strong, but that was fast. With a shout from the platoon sergeant, or whoever he was, the boat was in charge of the transportation. He said back in. Years later, we were talking about it. And he remarked to us today, he said, when I saw your lot marching to the station, I said to myself, thank God we have a Navy. What an unfortunate struggle was to kill you, God, isn't it?
Did the people of Hartlepool know you were going? Were they out for you?
Yeah, there were some people out. And we set up in the West Hartlepool station. And then it was on to the train. I was shipped from West Hartlepool. The full train was bound for Southampton. Well, Southampton for me was a bigger part of the world because, as I said before, the far side of the was like Doncaster. All I knew about Southampton was that people were going to see people that people were on holiday. And we arrived at Southampton, and the old DC to Rome border. All we had happened, all we got on the train, that was it, was a haversack rattle. Well, you think I have a second on the station. Talk to Southampton when you see some of the same way. And the three of these were on the street side. You go, hot mega. Can't remember what it was. Couldn't see. Daddy came along. And that's what I got that view. That was on the street side. Religious organization. Lord bless you and grant you the very best of coming to you. Oh, you are sincerely William J. Clark, B3, after the present East, Southampton. You're always welcome on line from you. And I have on the front page 21 years of age, and this group is this being. Well, that was before that, because I was sure I didn't have the time back. But I was just going to be left. But the war had really started then.
What were your feelings about going abroad?
I was scared of that. I've got to be honest. But not actually scared, not actually scared. I think that's a bit strong. I was bewildered. That's a good idea. I was bewildered. I mean, here I was in a new world, about 10 weeks training, was not going to fight any country, never been no farther than Doncaster. I went across the channel and go to France. Got on there with what's the word, segregation, foreboding. So I wouldn't find anything back here. And then I began to think about what father used to do. About the boatload going out, and the empty boats coming back. There I am. Well, it's no good grumbling and grousing. You're on the boat now, and you've got to accept it. So we got on the boat. We're on the boat at the evening time. Set sail.
Do you remember the date that you set sail?
Oh, well, I couldn't remember the date. 1 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 1 8 7 We wanted to cheer about.
What were your first impressions of France and the French?
Not a lot, because I thought Cherbourg was a bit of a good. Of course, that again, we landed in the docks. And docks are pretty dirty places. We fell out on the dock side. And we're sitting up against the wall. And I remember talking to a little lady, little French lady, probably D. Mason, I still don't know. Cigarette cards, French cigarette cards. I have learned a little bit French at school. So I managed to get by and have a little bit of talk with boy about it. He signed his name on. I remember he said about three kids of German, welcome. We were with some more things about the people. But, I was a bit apprehensive myself at the fact. I know it's different. But we sat on the dock side for about a good hour or so. And the good stream came in the top of the because they're all sitting and expecting the same thing. And in the truth of the capital, getting there, and then we stood in the these capital. I don't know how many of them. I think we'll give them another 100% rush then. And the French games were the plane was unbelievable. And we were off. Doors open, a bit fresh air. The weather was pretty decent, I remember the point. Next stop was one. And that was a holding camp. Called reinforcement camp. So we of the DOI were led down to the DOI lines. And George, Maurice, and myself were allocated to this tent. And when we went in, there were about four blokes over well over 35. We were only two kids in there, and they were first 10 boys out here, They were all DIs of the Northwest Frontier Brigade who had been on, reservists. They had been called. So, they were pretty friendly. All of them had all been cooked. That's what we were, all coots. You could always tell coots, but it's always the deal with all the sweet. He said, we asked him what happened. He said, oh, we'll take that way down to the wall. So I had my first night out in France. I went into this bar and they got the wine out. After the law, though, we couldn't have had to do it again. I was drinking the wine and the pot. I start to sing a song, Sur le pont d'Avion, which is on the bridge of Avion. And I was greeted as a hero by the French people inside and had me on the table singing before long. That was the first night. I said, I think I'm going to have you. Anyhow, coming back is Bill Thompson, the second spelling with me here. One called Bud King, he left. He said, now look, I'm going to give you good advice. We were the Dunes, we shop at the Dunes. We're not going to any sex trafficking, greenhouse, no, they are. each tenth is a daylight tenth. So tomorrow morning, the bugle will blow. And when the bugle blows, everybody gets up to it. Then, the space time goes along 3, 6, 9, 12 on that foot. And away they go. And maybe go to Essex, and maybe go to and go up in there, Delhi. So he says, what happened? He says, really, his bottom tent, the toilets are down there. He says, on that bugle blows, he says, on your feet and into that toilet. So, the beers went by, the beers went by. And there's all stories on here, all the roads, like, the reinforcements that keep going up, and we were still there. We kept visiting the toilet every morning when the bugle blew, we were in the toilet. But it was not the last. One morning we woke up. Everybody put the equipment on. This must have been fairly near. And we formed in a huge club. The whole reinforcement camp. All different regiments. And the man in charge of the JLR at the time was one John Michael Hammer. I think he was a captain then, he really became a major in the head of the time. And we set off to walk. And walk. And walk. Day in and day out. Did anybody know where we were? Here we were, about it. There'll be about two battalions of reinforcements. And we broke off to about a battalion strength. And we went from one place to another. We thought we just turn on building. We went to a place called Elbrook, Burnley, went to a place called Nail, and this was marching day in and day out. A place called Le Nouveau, Rodgery, Beaufort, Burglar Roy, Roost Fontaine, and the days and days of going by, and we walked and broke them, blistered them. And we couldn't find out what was going on. Well, what actually one place, and I think if I remember rightly in my group, was a place called Burglar Roy, who stopped. But while we stopped, there was a little whitewashed farmhouse. Just let it know it's mine. I'm going to ask you about the picture. Well, I passed them with a green one. Because I was getting to do an old soldier, man. So when he knocked on the door, and he frankly come to the door, put his arms on me, he's crying. I said, what's the matter? He said, Frank, capitulated. Oh, I said, no, I can't be Frank. Oh. We wandered around the road frontier like a bunch of us too, yeah? France is finished. And then he started telling me, he was an old soldier, showed me his stomach. The first time I seen one was a day ago and he got his blood on. He had a stomach day, he had a stomach of George, originally. And he sat and cried all the time I was there. Anyhow, I find it's what's happening? I don't know what's happening. I'm supposed to be with the British Army. I don't know what's happening. I'm just following the crowd here. So, he told me to show the radio. Switch the radio on. And I understood the word that the France had surrendered. So I I said a couple of votes here, wasn't it great? Yeah, I said, maybe France is surrendered. And of course, it went on like wildfire. The next thing I knew, John Mayall, farmer, came up. Why have you got all this crap on? I said, it's not crap, sir. I said, there's a radio in the house. And then I got wrong from being in the house. And he went in. Even he didn't know, and he would all wander around France. Hundreds of soldiers, you know? So we set off to march again, or a journey this time. We didn't have anything but rifles. There was no support, no artillery, no nothing. It was just a rifle reinforcement crowd.
And mixed regiments still.
Yeah. And we said we'd do an exercise. We'd pretend we'd be Bren wounds. So there were three of us. One at the cell at the front and two at the back. And we'd be Bren wounds. This is an exercise. And it all happened. And France had capitulated, and here we are, sitting in the middle of France. So, this has been exercised, and we must have been a lot of stuff. People were watching, no more what we're playing at, children up the road pretending to be carriers. Anyhow, we left there, and away we walked again all day all night. The refugees are coming on, where we go another way.
How bad was that situation?
Well, the situation we were in was bad. We didn't have any grub. We didn't have any. All we did was come out of the camp and started walking.
I mean, obviously, you're seeing these refugees for the first time. I mean, that's the situation. How bad were? What state were they in?
Dejected, lost, miserable. They were calling us. We should be somewhere else. Booing us as we walk past, yeah. Here we were, we didn't know a thing about it. In fact, one year, our past, a threshing machine passed me going one year, and we used to have the boots, army boots, just with it. So many in the there, and so many in the hair. My feet were so sore, I got back to the lorry, and I must have slid for a mile. I got out of the back of the lorry and slid. Because by now, the whole lot was stretched out for miles, stragglers. You were twos and threes. Well, George and myself, believe me, the three of us stuck together. And we had a little fellow from Scottish Fields. He's always been tackled, a lad called Cripple. I do remember this. And he said, that's what we're doing now. He said, I'm going to throw it away. He said, I'm not going to carry it any longer. Because if you don't remember it, we've been marching for years. Nothing to eat. But I got his pack and I carried it for about 2 miles. And we were crossing this bridge. And I said, there you are, where's the pack back? Keep the master still open, it's just straight over the bridge after I tried it. I said, mate, you're looking at a pitch here over at you. And the situation was absolutely chaos. Here we were, hundreds of reinforcements, struggling out for miles, nobody knew where we were going. We just wandered around, lost. And we sat down, George Morris used to clear the mouth of it. And we had to send ourselves to clear the mouth of him for the fellow was walking again. We sat down for a break because we could stop any time we wanted. Nobody was in charge. Unfortunately, John Michael Hamlin came along and we were arguing that on the street. And just before that, I sent to George Morris, I said, George, I'm sick for what? I'm going to start the theatre. drew his revolver. He said, get that bloody mouth over there. I'll just start seeing, I'll show you. I think you better go to the job.